Time's really flying. Well, we're almost at the exit door of 2023 already, aren't we? And we'll also see the final chapter of a dramatic Rugby World Cup 2023 written at the Stade de France in Paris this weekend. Hope you've had a superb sporting week. Yep, it's that time of the week again. Thanks for joining us. This is Talking Point. Welcome to it. My name's Trevor Cromer. And then there were just two, Yeah, the greatest rugby rivalry, in my opinion, on the planet will resume this weekend in none other than the Rugby World Cup final. It's South Africa, our Springboks, versus the New Zealand All Blacks. That's happening on Saturday night, and such is the time flown by that we're already 4 weeks into the 50-over Cricket World Cup in India. The Proteas making a decent fist of that one so far in India, but we'll chat about that one in another instalment of Talking Point. Joining me in studio this week, a regular on our show, he's made the run on side once again, the head of Citizen Sport, Jacques van der Westhuizen. And Jacques, great to have you with us as always. Welcome back.
Thanks, Trevor. Yeah, good one. Thank you.
And the beef in our front row today, also joining our Rugby World Cup special this week on Talking Point Hotline. Welcome back, senior citizen rugby writer. He dabbles in a fair deal of cricket too, Ross Roche. Great to have you chatting with us again, Ross.
Thanks very much, Trevor. Good to be here.
Straight to the kickoff, gents. We've seen it all. Fatigue, horses for courses, depth, intelligent rotation, constantly keeping opponents guessing, the bench splits, all part of the Russie and Nienaber show that's played itself out over the past 6 weeks. Very short turnaround time from a tough physical battle against England, as was the case when they faced France the previous week. Just two changes to the Bok run-on side this week for the ultimate one. The experienced 2019 final halfback combination of Faf de Klerk and Andre Pollard. They're in for Kobus Reinach and Marnie Lebok. 10 players, in fact, who started that 2019 final in Japan. Gents, we'll start with one of you, and then you can bounce the ball around and pop passes to one another. Take us through the Bok lineup, and yes, they did it again. A 7-1 split. Utility back Willie Leroux, the only backline player on the bench.
Yeah, I'll go with the starting team first. I think it's quite expected in a way after Andre Pollard's heroics in the last two matches. I think it was always going to be inevitable that he was going to be called back into the starting team. So he's a 10, and then obviously Faf de Klerk as well. Lots of experience played there in the final 4 years ago. And, we're expecting a lot of wet, rainy weather in Paris for that final. And Faf de Klerk, out of the scrum halves that are in the squad, is probably the most defensive one out of them. Box kicking is also, something that gets him a right tick. So those are the two changes for me. I'm not surprised by the rest of the starting team. Obviously, there would have been a few calls in that for a guy like Kane and Moody to come in, maybe something a bit different. Maybe his height would have been something they would have considered out on the wing. But the guys have performed well, so I'm not too surprised that he's gone with mostly the same team. Dwayne Vermeulen at 8 again, perhaps a question mark there, but as we've seen, the Boks, back their experience, and he's been there and done that. So, yeah, it's a solid starting team. Pollard really does give one a sense of, calmness with him being there, especially with the conditions that are expected. But, yeah, I'll let Ross, chat a bit about that bench. For me, it's quite a shock. I was completely surprised to see that they've actually gone with a 7-1. Ross, just your thoughts on that? I know that you have liked it in the past and you've backed it, but just your thoughts going into this huge match with that bench.
Yeah, I think the 7-1 split is the very, very controversial one, but I think Russie and Jacques have shown over the years that they are, innovators. And it's something that, they've used to catch teams off guard, and I'm sure that having used the 7-1 split for the first time and picking up a record 35-7 win over the All Blacks, Twickenham just before the World Cup, I'm sure that played a big role in them sort of backing that split again, having the confidence to do that. I think if that result had been different on that occasion, we probably wouldn't have seen the split at the World Cup. Instead, they backed it against Ireland in a game that we definitely could have won. And now they've gone with it again against the All Blacks. I think they've obviously gone all in on the forwards. They're not making any mistakes about it. They've decided, this is our biggest strength is our pack. We're going to go into this game with basically two complete packs, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them throw those seven guys on in around the 45th minute, just like they did at Twickenham, and have a complete different pack for, you know, the second half. And they're going to try smash them up front and go from there.
Gents, we said so right at the outset of the World Cup. As lopsided as the draw may have seemed, which was based on rankings in the four-year cycle running up to the World Cup, both New Zealand and South Africa were on a collision course at some stage from day one, even as early as the quarterfinals. That didn't pan out. But it's a jackpot, an All Black Springbok final, the first since that epic 1995 final at Ellis Park. The Boks have had two draining physical encounters against France and England, very, very close calls. The All Blacks beat Ireland and Argentina, pretty convincingly, it has to be said. They've seemingly hit their straps, and that early loss to France is long behind them. Gents, just talk us through the run-up of the respective teams quickly. Really tough for both teams.
Yeah, it has been tough. I mean, you know, we knew all along, as you said, that those quarterfinal matchups were going to be huge, and they were. So it took a lot out of these two sides. There's no doubt about that. I think, you know, the Springboks sort of, you know, from the very beginning of the World Cup said every match is like a final to them because of the opposition that they had to face with Scotland in their pool and then Ireland also. So, you know, they've been in sort of knockout mode from day one at the World Cup, and they've had to lift themselves physically, mentally, week in and week out. The only really easier game was probably against Romania. But Tonga would have been one that would have, you know, sat there in the back of their minds as one that could potentially be a banana skin. And fortunately, it wasn't. But, you know, you don't want to take on the Tongans lightly. We've struggled against them before. So a huge effort has been required by the Boks to get to where they are. That is my one concern. I'm not sure how much they've got left in the tank. I've read and heard a lot of people discussing it this week, saying it's a World Cup final. It's against the All Blacks. You don't need to motivate the guys. They'll get up for this match themselves. And there's no fear in them being a spent, you know, outfit. But that is my concern. They looked a bit flat against England. I hope they haven't played their, you know, their finals already in those matches against Scotland, Ireland, France, and then England. I mean, those are four massive matches, and now they've got the biggest one of all. And the All Blacks are a side that you don't take lightly, and we might have beat them at Twickenham, but they're a team that sort of has our number, to be honest. Yeah, a tough one for me. And then, you know, as you say, the All Blacks have had a slightly easier run. And who's more battle-hardened? Who's more rested? Those are the questions that we'll, you know, be asking ourselves in the lead-up to this match.
Anything to potentially add to that, Ross, particularly in terms, I would say, of the fuel in the tank and the energy levels and the inspiration to get up for this final, as Jacques mentioned?
Yeah, I think I was very interested to see in the build-up how they've some guys been talking about the fact that going into this final, the Boks have played, well, when they play New Zealand now in the final, they will have played the entire top six in world rugby in this World Cup. And that's something I don't think has happened before, to play the entire top six in your group stage and your knockouts going in and in the final, and that's something really massive. You know, as Jacques says, the guys have put in massive efforts in all those games, and even in sort of the easier ones, in a game against like Tonga, which was extremely physical, you know, takes it out of you. So there's no doubt that they have put in massive efforts. But I think that, you know, I was confused at first when Jacques and Rossi made such a lot of so many changes for that Tonga game. And, you know, looking back on it now, I fully understand why. You know, I realized they were protecting those players because they knew how big the games were going to be in the knockouts, on top of having already played Scotland and Ireland. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, that match 23 that played against Tonga gives us that little bit of energy, you know, for the starters that are going in now into this World Cup final. Because they weren't, most of those guys weren't exposed to that brutal Tonga match. And, you know, they did look a bit spent against England, but they've had a whole week now to prepare. Hopefully they haven't gone too hard in training, and hopefully just the occasion will lift them.
This is a final steeped in history. It's a bitter rivalry. Even before the birth of Sanzar and the Rugby Championship in its current form, the Tri Nations prior to that, of course, we've seen some epic encounters between these two sides. 105 meetings, just to quickly put you in the picture. The All Blacks have won 62, the Boks have won 39, four draws. But I think for the purpose of current form, we should perhaps hone in on results since 2021, guys. It's all square, three wins apiece. Now, gents, aside from the bitter rivalry, does history have any role to play in this final? Both rugby superpowers gunning for a record fourth William Webb Ellis Cup. That's what it's all about. Couldn't be more evenly matched, really. And how important is that Bok win at Twickenham, really?
Yeah, from my side, I mean, I don't think that win at Twickenham means anything. It was a warm-up game, so, you know, read into it what you want. This is the biggest game of all. You know, and like you say, the rivalry between these two teams over the last number of years has been extremely close and tight. I don't think either one can claim to be a favourite or an underdog actually this weekend. I really believe it's a 50-50. It's neutral ground, and there's really nothing in it. So close has been the, you know, the contest in recent times. That match at Twickenham was almost an anomaly in a way. The Boks don't do that sort of thing, and the All Blacks don't lose like that normally against anybody, really. So I don't think we need to read too much into it. Of course, it will give the Springboks a lot of confidence, but I don't think the All Blacks will be too worried about it. They seem to have hit some sort of, you know, form and momentum during this World Cup, and they're a team to be taken very seriously. I mean, it's the All Blacks. They've had our number over all these years, you know, going back in history and that. They also have three World Cup titles behind them, played in finals. I don't think we need to read anything into recent history. This is a one-off. The weather's going to play a part in it. The build-up to this tournament, or to this final, is going to play a part in it, as we've already discussed. The referee will play a role. There are all sorts of things that will come into it. So from my side, whether we've beaten them or lost to them in the last number of years, you know, it doesn't really matter for me.
I think Jacques covered that one pretty comprehensively. So I'm going to throw the ball back to you, Ross, and then back to Jacques. The build-up. Now, somehow there appears to always be an issue, whether it be factual or pure speculation, that makes its appearance. That's to try and unsettle the Springboks. There's been a well-timed hostility directed at Eben Etzebeth in the past, among others. Then, for those who might remember, there was Sean Fitzpatrick's alleged Susie waitress food poisoning scandal. That was back in 95. Still not clear if that's truth or fiction yet. Now, this week it's been all about Bongi Mbonambi's alleged racist outburst directed at England flanker Tom Curry. With all the twists and the turns that one continues. But Bongi has thankfully been cleared to play. An unsettling week with that little sideshow, of course. By contrast, the All Black camp has been very, very quiet. For starters, your take on that, Ross, the Bongi issue.
Yeah, it's always, as you mentioned, there's always something. So at least I think the guys are a bit used to that, you know, having a bit of disruption here and there. But I think it definitely would have been a concerning one for all involved, especially with Bongi being the only specialist number two in the squad leading up to this final. So there would have been a lot of worry there for the coaches and the players as well, that they might have been going in a situation where Dion Faurie was starting and Mark Finn started and was the backup on the bench. And Dion Faurie has actually done very well at hooker in this World Cup when he's been asked to play in the position. So, you know, that wouldn't have been as concerning. But, you know, early injury and Mark Finn starting has to play 75 minutes as a hooker, and that would have been a very scary thought against the All Blacks. But luckily, he has been cleared. It took longer than it probably should have for World Rugby to make that decision, which is disruptive. But I think that the Boks have, you know, they've always sort of been on the back foot in terms of things like this. And I think that Jacques and Rossi have learned how to shield the players in their time. And Rossi is one of the kings of, you know, deflecting and taking sort of eyes off of the team. So I don't think the guys will be too badly affected, but yeah, I think it definitely would have been on quite a few Oaks' minds.
Yeah, I mean, from my side, I agree with what Ross has said. The most unfortunate thing for me was the fact that World Rugby took as long as they did, you know, to clear this thing up and put it to bed, so to speak. It's the allegations, you know, really came out late Saturday night, Sunday. I would have thought that, you know, in a Rugby World Cup final week, they would have got this thing, you know, sorted out by Tuesday. And if not sorted out, at least then said, you know, we'll investigate it after the World Cup and let everybody just get on with the business of preparing for the final. But, yeah, slightly disruptive, but I don't think it really upset the box too much. They probably knew already that there was maybe nothing in it. So, yeah, you know, we carry on and so on, and fortunately the box are at full strength.
We just got to wonder if Susie's maybe going to slip into a Paris hotel in the next 24 hours. A bit of rain about in Paris of late, we're hearing. That could influence the game. We saw how England played us on the aerials with a greasy ball last week. But assistant coach Dan Himon claimed earlier in the week it's not something they're too worried about. Talk by various players about what areas of the game could potentially tilt this one. Constant mumbles about the breakdown, set pieces, attacking prowess. Both sides have got some incredible fetches, as they like to call them, and I can honestly see the box totally out-scrumming the All Blacks, or not quite out-scrumming the All Blacks as easily as they did against England. We'll start off with you on that one, Jacques.
Yeah, I mean, so many variables, like we've already mentioned, that, you know, go into this match. You know, Ben O'Keefe has been our referee in the last three matches at this World Cup in total. So the box sort of got used to the way he refereed the scrums. And you know, you don't play on the referee, but, you know, you get used to and accustomed to how he blows certain things. On this occasion, it's Wayne Barnes. We haven't had him at all during this World Cup, so how's he going to see the scrums? It's, you know, everybody sees them slightly differently. That's the one thing about rugby. There's so many grey areas and everything is open to interpretation as well. So, you know, that's one area that I think will be a bit of a concern to the box. We've gotten used to one type of, you know, officiating, and now we're having Wayne Barnes. And yeah, the All Blacks are, you know, they might not be as powerful as the box, but, you know, they've got a pretty good scrum themselves. Even though, you know, that match at Twickenham, you know, showed that we are superior to them at the set piece. So that's going to be an interesting aspect of the game. The box are obviously targeting the scrums as they do every time, and we've seen what's happened in the past, you know, during this World Cup, how powerful and how beneficial that strong scrum is. So, you know, that's just one aspect for me where, you know, the box can really try and get the upper hand. And in the conditions and with the packs that have been selected, you know, starting and on the bench, it's pretty clear, you know, what they want to do. They want to scrum. They want to maul. They want to kick to the corners with Pollard at 10 and try and control the game up front. So, yeah, I mean, that's it's obvious, and the All Blacks know what's coming as well. So, yeah, that there's not much more to it than that.
Ross, your take?
Yeah, obviously it is our biggest strength. It's what we've backed going into this match, so we've gone all in on it. And hopefully we can get some early ascendancy on them. I have been a bit worried in the World Cup so far in that, you know, Stephen Kitsoff hasn't managed to get the sort of ascendancy that he usually has over the years, you know, and Ox has had to come on with the big plays. which I've been absolutely loving, to be honest. He's such a monster. And the All Blacks have also been a lot better at the scrums in the last year and a bit, especially after having struggled, you know, especially against Ireland in that series that they lost in New Zealand and that poor run that they went on. But the youngsters who've come in have adapted nicely, and they've actually got a lot better. So hopefully we can get off to a good start, put them on under pressure, and then we've got that bomb squad to come on in the second half and blow them away. That would be the ideal situation.
Gents, I know it's a toughie before we wrap it. Take your hand away from your heart, switch to your head. Not going to ask you for an outright prediction. That would probably be a touch cruel or unfair. Let me rather phrase the question this way. Each of you, if you can give me two areas where this game will be potentially lost and two areas where it's most likely to be won.
From my side, I think goal kicking is going to be crucial. We've seen it so far. So from my side, you know, Richie Mwanga has missed a few recently. He's maybe not as accurate as some of the past goal kickers for the All Blacks. Pollard has stepped up now and shown what he can do and how solid he is and how calm he is when it comes to goal kicking. And in a game between these two teams where it's so close and so tight and it's really difficult to separate them, it could really come down to a drop goal or a penalty at the end. So for me, that's it. And then, you know, the other thing is trying to keep intact and maintain and keep in control that All Black back division. They're a team that sort of run from anywhere. They love throwing the ball around. Will Jordan has been fantastic. They have always been that type of team. They'll attack from deep. They'll attack from almost nowhere. And we need to be alert to that.
Ross?
Yeah, I think the big worry for me is our aerial game. It used to be our biggest strength. You know, at the last World Cup, we were accused of being the most boring team and all that kind of stuff because of the way that we played. And we've sort of come and stuck there recently in that, you know, in the All Blacks win in Auckland, they absolutely beat us in the aerial game. And England also absolutely dominated it. And we were just lucky that we were playing a weak side like England, because against one of the stronger teams in the top four, we probably would have been blown away in that first half if we played like that. So I really hope our aerial game comes right, especially if the All Blacks decide to go to the boot as they did in Auckland. As Jacques mentioned, a guy like Kanan Moody would have probably calmed me a bit if he'd been in the mix there for that kind of thing. You know, tall, big, strong guy, being able to field those high balls. But hopefully we can come right on that. And then obviously, for me, the biggest thing is the forwards. That's where we're going to win this. You know, 7-1 bench split, two different forward packs. As long as we stop their momentum and as long as we smash their forwards, I think we'll be fine. That game at Twickenham, we were also lucky in the fact that Scott Barrett got that red card, so it was wasn't as difficult to smash their pack. This time around, they probably will not be making that kind of mistake in getting a red card so early. So you just got to hope that we play to our strengths and edge it there.
There we go. Titanic final in prospect. Wherever you may be watching, enjoy the game. Let's hope our nation, with all its domestic problems, will be plunged into celebration on Saturday night and, albeit for a while, maybe united like never before by a national sporting team. Our national sporting teams have the ability, more than any of our politicians, to unite our nations. So good luck to the Bokker. And the same, of course, applies to our Proteas, who are fighting it out at the Cricket World Cup in India. Next week, we'll be reverting back to that cricket again as the Cricket World Cup gets towards its business end. So listen out for that. Jacques Ross, thanks for the chats. Insightful, interesting as always to share your views with us, but don't go away. Ross, if you'll just stay on the line a little bit longer, as you know what's coming next, it's our weekly Flop and Gold Star feature, where we hail sporting excellence and, of course, we bash mediocrity. My flop of the week, it's the Mercedes Formula One racing team. Now, Lewis Hamilton drove the race of his life in Austin, Texas, to finish second in the American Formula One Grand Prix, only to be disqualified for a technical breach on his car. So too was Ferrari's Charles Leclerc, incidentally, who finished sixth. It's understood that the wear on the planks underneath his car were found to have exceeded limits, but their own, by their own admission, should I say, they were left highly embarrassed and certainly owe the multiple world champion Lewis Hamilton an apology. My gold star, that goes to, well, not for the first time. It was a tough week to decide, really, but I'm settling not for the first time. Proteas batters Quinton de Kock and Heinrich Claassen. both in superb form with a willow in hand at the Cricket World Cup in India, both producing some scintillating batting. What a treat to watch. But for a slight bit of inconsistency, I might even have been able to add Aidan Markram to that mix here, also having a reasonably good tournament. But kudos for standing in as captain in Themba Bavuma's absence, nevertheless, due to illness. Ross, how are you looking?
Yeah, for flop, I'm going to stick with the – well, for both, I'm going to stick with the rugby. My flop of the week will go to Willie LaRue as one, and for his little charge in to celebrate after that semi-final win. You know, as an experienced player, I didn't like seeing the way he charged in there, screaming in the England players' faces. I think that's more of something left to the footy guys, and it really shouldn't be in rugby. And then also, obviously, England captain Owen Farrell for the way he shouted at the ref during that one penalty, which was marched forward by 10 metres because he wouldn't let go of the ball. I thought that was also disgusting behaviour. Those are two moments that I really don't enjoy seeing on the rugby field, and I hope I won't see again. And my gold star of the week will go to our Salads Don't Win Scrums Oxen Chair. What a monster. Absolutely loved his performance off the bench, and although it was Pollard who came clutch with the kicks, we wouldn't have been able to be in those positions without Ox's efforts.
Jacques, where are you leaning?
Yeah, it's a tricky one this week because the Proteas have been so great and the Box, you know, won that semi-final. So I'm hoping that I can talk about the Box next week as my gold star winning the World Cup. But for this week, I'm going to join you, Trevor, in saluting our Proteas cricket team. They had that shock defeat against the Dutch and that, but they've hit back brilliantly. The batting department has been superb, and I'm especially happy with a guy, you know, for a guy like Quinton. This is his last major tournament in 50-over cricket for the Proteas, and he's really looking fantastic. I mean, so well done to him and the other batting unit. And then I'm going to join Ross sort of about poor behaviour, but not so much on the field. I think it has been very disappointing to see how some of the fans have reacted to this Bongi Mbonambi Tom Curry situation. You know, Tom Curry has been called all sorts of names, and all sort of nasty things have been said about the whole incident. I don't know if Tom Curry, you know, made that up or maybe he misheard something. But it's poor behaviour to go on like some fans have done. I think we're better than that. You know, when it comes to race issues and so on, I think it's important to, you know, to wait for, you know, everybody's side of the story and hear everybody out before jumping to conclusions. I also think it's important that everybody gets respected. This is just a sport that we all love. And, yeah, so my flop goes to some of those fans who and how they have reacted to the whole situation around this slur incident.
And that's where we'll wrap it. You have yourself a great sporting week with the Citizen as your companion, both online and in print. Undikant, it's Jacques van der Westhuizen, isn't it? And on Dykant, it's Ross Roche. Head of Sport, Jacques, thanks for joining us and sharing your wealth of sporting knowledge with us. And also, once again, to our panelists on the Talking Point Hotline this week, senior citizen sports journalist Ross Roche. My name's Trevor Cramer. This has been Talking Point. You'll find us on citizen.co.za. Click on Multimedia. The subsection is Podcasts. Why not follow Citizen News on Iono FM? That's for the audio version. You'll also find the Talking Point video podcast on the Citizen's YouTube account. Go check it out and subscribe. Have yourself an awesome sporting week. Go Bokke. From me, Trevor Cramer. Cheers.